Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
I'd like to welcome you to the Tattered Cover Bookstore. Tonight's author, as I was reading her book and looking over her books, I was just thinking there's an interesting two things that are interesting for me. One, a lifelong and seems like will be a lifelong New Yorker. Both of her books are set in these very exotic locales, so there's a lure of both of them. In her first book, The Hot House Flower and The Nine Plants of Desire, I think is set in the Mexico rainforest and looks at the plants and treasures that are there and the people who are looking for them. And then her latest book, which brings her here to our store this evening, The Sense of Darkness. In this new book, she is set in Louisiana, kind of in the bayous in the back country there. And most importantly, there is a main character who is really pushed forward in the world. Her whole world changes when she is given a fragrance that is specific for her from her grandmother, something that she inherits. And in that, her whole life changes once she begins using that. So in a really interesting way. So I just, I think everybody will enjoy listening to tonight's author. So let me introduce her, Margot Berwin.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for coming out. This is the last day of my book tour. I've been away from home for almost 2 weeks, and I'm really happy to end up at Tattered Cover because for my first book, I read here, and it was a really great experience. So I'm really happy to be back here again. I love this bookstore. So this is my book. It's called Scent of Darkness. And as you just heard, it was written in New Orleans, which is kind of an interesting story, because I'm from New York City, but New York City is not a great place to be a writer. It's a great place to be a visual artist. There's tons of stuff going on all the time. You walk down the street, there's a million people, everybody looks different and interesting. But as a writer, it's very hard to find any peace and quiet in New York City. There's always sirens, people yelling. You know, it's just difficult. I live in the East Village, which is a very noisy neighborhood. So I work during the day, and I write websites. And I was at work, and I was bitching and moaning and complaining about not being able to find any quiet space to write. So a coworker came up to me and said that he had an apartment in New Orleans, and if I wanted to go down there and use it, I could. Turns out he had just started AA, and his sponsor said, New Orleans is not the place for you to go. So he gave me the keys to his apartment. And I thought I would go down there for a week and kind of get a jump start on writing. But when I got down there, I just really fell in love with New Orleans, and I decided to quit my job and write and stay there and write the entire first draft there. So initially, I have a character who's in medical school, and initially he was supposed to go to school in Columbia. But since I decided to stay in New Orleans, I had him transferred to Tulane. So that's how I set, and then I set the whole second half of the book in New Orleans. So it's interesting. My book came out a couple of weeks ago, and when a book first comes out, a lot of bloggers start blogging about it, and you get to hear what random people think about your work. And three separate bloggers have now said that this is a book about a broken child or broken children. And, you know, I was pretty convinced I wrote a book about perfume. So kind of strange. So I wanted to, before I talk to you about the book, I wanted to talk just a little bit about perfume and about the title of the book. Perfume was created by the French, and it was used initially to cover up the human stench because people didn't bathe a lot. So people were dirty, and they used perfume to cover up. There wasn't a lot of running water at the time. And the irony is that now people are so scrupulously clean that they actually use perfume to put scent back into their bodies. And they spend a lot of money to do that. The book is a little bit about shaving, and shaving is a problem too, because hair follicles hold on to scent. And now that everybody completely shaves their bodies for the most part, not everybody, but a lot of people, they've lost some of their a lot more of their scent, which is also a sexual marker. So we also use perfume to put that back into our bodies. And people consider perfume to be made of plants and flowers and sort of florally nice kind of things. But perfume has a lot of very dark elements in it, which are common to all perfumes, and one of them being ambergris, which is the sperm from whales. And perfume companies spend a lot of money going out to sea because the sperm floats on top of the ocean, and they take nets and they collect it, and they use it in perfumes. And musk also is the anal gland of a deer, of a musk deer. And this is a big problem with PETA because they kill the deer and then they take the gland and they use it in perfume. And what the deer uses that gland for when it's alive is to mark its territory. So it sprays this scent around and marks its territory. So when you wear a perfume with musk and you hug somebody, you are basically using the anal gland of a deer to mark your territory. And the reason that these scents, these darker parts of perfumes are called animalics. And the reason that they are put into perfumes is to give them sort of a human feeling, sort of an intimate feeling, an intimate scent, because you don't want to smell like flowers. You want to smell slightly sexual, and these are the qualities in perfume that create a sexuality. So those are very dark elements, and that's why I titled my book Scent of Darkness. So my book is about love, or loving two people at the same time, and it's about perfume and shaving and apparently broken children, although I don't agree with that. So I'm going to read you three short passages about each of those topics. I'll start from the beginning, always a good place to start. My name is Eva, from the longer and more beautiful Evangeline. I had something very special once, something that I took for granted and lost. I set out to find it again, and as so often happens, it was right there in front of me. Or should I say it was right there inside of me, running through my veins like a blessing or a plague. Jasmine smells like human flesh. Mix it with cumin, which smells like sweat, and you have the scent of sex. If you spread it on your body, watch out, you'll have sycophants all over the place, people crawling out of the woodwork to be close to you. Human beings are defenseless against scent. They can't hide from it because they can't see it, or touch it, or hold it. All by itself, it crawls into their brains, and by the time they're in love with it, or the person it's coming from, it's too late. They're tied to it forever through the long, tight leash of memory. I suppose what I'm trying to say is that a great scent, like a great love, can crash onto the shore of your life like a wave, creating either damage or change, or in my case, both. What happened when I came across a scent like that was I fell in love with two men at the same time, and one was pure evil and one was good. It was an old-fashioned love triangle, a classic tale that came up roses and jasmine and, of course, tears. So my name is Eva, from the longer and more beautiful Evangeline, and for me the scent I found held my past, present, and future in its ethereal little hand. I don't mean to be morbid, and mostly I'm not, but it is possible to love someone evil. I know that for a fact. I wish I didn't, but wishing isn't going to change my story. It happened during my 18th year, when I was too young to know that there are events and relationships that never go away, that you can never take back, that change you in ways over which you have no control. My grandmother, Louise, the person I was closest to, would say that none of that mattered anyway. That who we love isn't a question of good or evil, but one of scent. Scent can do crazy things to the mind, she said. It can make us love people we shouldn't and turn away those we should. It can make us desire the child of a criminal and shun the overtures of a saint. Never open your legs for a man whose mind you love, but only for the man whose scent you can't live without. That's the one you'll stay with forever. I'd spent every summer of my childhood with Louise, but it was the summer of my 18th year that changed everything. That was the beginning of all the danger and the beauty and the blood. Louise lived in the town of Cyril, which sat on a mountaintop in the westernmost part of New York State. It was a small town with only one road used for both directions, so it was said that the way in was also the way out. The physical description of the town would not be important to my story, except for the fact that Louise was an aromata, a master in the creation of scent, a sorceress of nothing, as she liked to call herself, for scent has no physical form. Put irises next to your mother's bed, she told me, and she'll bring you a baby brother. Add a drop of lavender to the wash water, and you'll dream of the man you love. Eucalyptus makes you taller, almondine fatter, and jasmine will wrap your entire life in a mystery. Do you believe that? I asked. Not all of it, but it's true what they say about jasmine. If it comes from southern India, look out. Wear it often enough, and I swear you won't recognize your own life. You'll be so confused about who you are, you won't be able to pick your face out of a crowd in your own dream. Louise didn't start out in Cyril. She was born in a small town called Fayetteville in south central Louisiana. She was Louise from Louisiana, her very name inseparable from the thick, boggy, impenetrable swamp from which she came. People up north call it the bayou, she said, when really it's 100 different bayous, no two of them the same, and each one capable of destroying you in its own particular way. Some look shallow and harmless, but they'll suck you under and hold you down in the mud till the very last breath comes out of your lungs. Others will sit there for decades, stagnant, mocking, taking a little bit more of your soul year after year, like a man who doesn't love you back. So Louise ends up leaving Evangeline a tiny vial of perfume. And in the part I'm going to read next, she decides to open the vial. Now, Louise has left her the vial with the instructions, do not take out the stopper unless you want everything in your life to change. So these few paragraphs are about when she removes the stopper from the vial. I held the vial in my hand and gazed at its ruby-red color so full of the promise of change, of Gabriel being mine instead of Rayanne's, and of life having a happy ending. I knew all about fairy tales never coming true, about men leaving the women who love them in the middle of the night, and mothers and daughters divided. But I wasn't so far gone that I lacked all hope. So slowly, ever so slowly, I pulled on the crystal stopper, sliding it toward me until it was all the way out of the vial. A mist rose up so fast it was as if it had been pressing up against the tiny glass, waiting forever to be released. I could see it in the air, and I put my face into its gray dampness and breathed the liquid into my body, first through my nose and then as deep inside of my lungs as I could get. It had a strange scent, dual in nature. It was dark like death by fire and very light like sunshine or freedom. I felt as if I could choose the side I wanted to be on, as if the perfume were asking me, Evangeline, are you darkness or are you light? I put the stopper itself to my nose. The power of it made me sit down on my dead grandmother's bed. There was jasmine from the south of India and red velvet roses molting on the vine. Further down was the unmistakable scent of leather and a slow burning fire. But still there was something else in the perfume that I could not name. I inhaled many times in an attempt to understand it, and although I couldn't, I knew without a doubt that it was the most important ingredient in the vial. If I'd had to describe it, I'd say it was the scent of darkness. So I'm going to read a little bit now about the shaving portion, where they have moved to New Orleans now. Gabriel, who is Evangeline's boyfriend, gets accepted to medical school in New Orleans. And they move there, and she has put this perfume on and discovers that it never comes off. She can shower, she can do whatever, the scent never comes off, and many people are becoming attracted to her, which is difficult for her because if you read in the earlier part of the book, she's not used to much attention. So when she gets to New Orleans, she meets an artist who becomes her second lover. This artist believes that the scent, if he could get to mix the scent in with his paints, that he would become a famous artist. He's a failed artist. He convinces Evangeline that he loves her for her, that he can't even smell the scent, but really he wants to get it into his painting so that he can become famous. Michael took my hand and we walked through the lilac Victorian. We didn't go into the studio, but into the bedroom and then the bathroom. The fixtures were gold and the floor was black marble and there was a crystal chandelier on the ceiling. I'd never seen such a thing in a bathroom before. The tub was old, deep, and ornate. The water ran out of the open mouth of an antique gilded dolphin. "It's from Greece," he said, turning on the faucet and watching the steaming water rush out of the mammal. "The hot water will make you that much more fragrant." Michael filled the tub with soapy water and left the room. I didn't take off my clothes. I wore my skin-colored bodysuit like a bathing suit and sank into the tub. The water was burning hot, and I accepted it as punishment for whatever it was that I was about to do. Michael came back into the room. He stood over me, breathing in the vapors coming from the tub, drawing them toward him with his hands, using his palms to wash the mist over his head, as if that alone might make him a better painter. "The heat," I said, "it's unbearable." "Shh," he said, "you'll get used to it." He opened the mirrored medicine cabinet and took out a shaving kit with a silver-handled razor and brush. "It's made from human hair, the softest there is. I bought it especially for you, only the best for my Evangeline." I did not bother to correct him, to tell him that I was Gabriel's Evangeline or Evangeline's Evangeline, because in that moment I was not completely sure whose I truly was. "It will grow back," he said. "It's no loss to you, and it means everything to me." He took the razor and carefully, so much more carefully than I ever could have done myself, he shaved my legs. He started at the ankle, and holding my foot in his hand, he made clean, smooth strokes around the delicate bone. He worked his way over my calves and knees and up to my thighs without missing a single hair, while I laid my head back on a pillow that hung over the edge of the bath and stared at the chandelier on the ceiling, pretending. When he was done, I swirled my fingers through the tiny hairs in his hand. "What are you going to do with these?" "I'm going to mix them into my paints." He drew the wet hairs together with his fingertips and wiped them into an empty silver bowl on the floor next to him, and then he brought his palm up to his nose. He inhaled deeply, then held his hand up to my face, and it was true. The hair had left behind the scents of jasmine, red velvet rose, fire, and the deep, natural, and earthy tang of leather. "If I can infuse your scent into my paintings, then people will be drawn to them just like they're drawn to you, without ever knowing why and without ever suspecting. The only thing they'll know for sure is that they have to have the canvas, and they will be willing to pay a high price for it. They'll place it front and center in their sitting rooms, and all of their friends will want to purchase one too. Just imagine a Michael Bonchance in every home in New Orleans." He spoke with a mania in his voice, on and on, with no breaks and no punctuation in his thoughts. "Don't you think they would want them anyway without the scent?" I asked, breaking into his run-on sentence when I had the chance. "Don't you have any belief in yourself as an artist?" "I know the level of my skill, Evangeline. I'm too old to kid myself about things like that." "What about the mermaids on the wall? Those are good." "I copied them from other people's work. Famous people. I could never come up with those ideas on my own. You are my key, Evangeline, my one chance, and together we will be fantastically wealthy and famous. I know we will." He held on to my legs while he spoke, wrapping his arms around them as if they were part of his own body. And when he finished talking, he put them back into the tub, shaved my arms from the fingertips to the shoulders, and then raising them up, he brought the blade down under each one, making sure to collect all of the thousands of tiny fibers in the silver bowl on the bathroom floor. Michael asked me to take off my bodysuit and shave the parts that he was not allowed to touch. And when he left the bathroom and closed the door behind him, I did. When I was finished, I stood looking at my body in the long oval mirror. Steam rose from my strange, hairless shape and fogged up the glass until I was not there at all. I stared at the emptiness, losing myself in the glass until I saw another shape in the mirror. Faint at first, but there they were, Michael's dark eyes staring at my naked body through the half-open bathroom door. I focused on the mirror, hoping to disappear in the vapors. "What are you looking for?" Michael whispered from the other side of the door. "Yesterday," I said to myself. "I'm looking for yesterday." Thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
What a courageous idea. How did you get so brave to write about that?
To write about the art, you mean the artist part?
No, about scent or external things going into art, personal things. Where did you find that idea?
I'm not sure. I honestly can't answer that. I think it started, my first book was about plants, and through writing about plants, I got really interested in scent, and then I started thinking about scent, and I knew I wanted to write a book about perfume, but I'm a storyteller, so I wanted to tell a story, and that's the one that came into my head. More than half of writing is laying around dreaming before anything gets on the paper. And I think I thought about that for a few years before I wrote it.
Thank you.
I'm also a big believer in writing about things that you don't know. If you go to school for writing or you study writing, teachers always say, write about what you know. But that's no fun. Like, it's much more fun to take topics that you don't know about and learn about them. So I love writing about things that I don't know, and I didn't know anything about scent, so I was able to discover a whole new field of interest. And recently in New York, they had something called Scent World, which is all the different perfumers from mostly from the south of France, Hermès, Guerlain, Chanel, the big perfume houses, come to New York, and they show their new scents. And I got to speak at Scent World and give out some of my books. And those people were absolutely lovely people to meet. Really, really fascinating, passionate about what they do, passionate about perfume. So it's been a very interesting experience for me as well.
So how long did it take you to write?
The parts about the artist, some of the book was written earlier, even earlier than my first book, but not including scent. So I'd say, all in all, probably the writing of this book took, it wasn't that long, maybe 2.5 or 3 years, but some parts of the book have been in my mind for 10 or more years, probably.
So you were in New Orleans that long?
Well, I just stayed for the first draft. I wrote one draft, which was 400-something pages long, and you can see the book's only 2-something, so it got honed a lot from that point. But I stayed there for the first draft, and I wrote all day long, and I went out and heard live music every night, and it was great. Anybody else?
Where to next? Mexico, then New Orleans.
Well, this book just came out, so now I have to work for a while, and I am starting to think about my next book, which I'm not going to say what it's about.
Is it going to go in the same general direction, flower scent?
No, it's not. No, different direction altogether. These two books were very odd for me. I never even thought about writing about plants or writing about scent. They're just the oddest two books, but here they are. And it was great joy for me to write them and get to spend time in other places and get to meet all kinds of interesting people and learn new stuff.
How does one find jasmine in India?
I made that up. It sounded very exotic to me. But it was an interesting story because when the book came out, an old friend of mine who's from India, who I met in New York, called me up because she had named her daughter Jasmine, but I didn't know that. And she's from the south of India, and she found that very fascinating. I want to thank you all so much for coming. It was a pleasure to read here. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.